Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Nun Dalet Amud Aleph with the two dots. The Gemara here is discussing what we mentioned in our Mishnah, a question that we also raised in the Mishnah, that the Mishnah mentions that there were three tikiot that were associated with leaving the Shar HaElyon, three tikiot that were blown on the Malah HaAsirit, on the tenth stair, and then three tikiot that were blown once they hit the ground level of the Azara until they went out of the Shar HaTachton. Those were all associated with the Miloy Hamayim, with bringing up the water for the Simchat Beit HaShoeva, for the Nisa Chamayim in the morning. The question was, when we went into the latter half of the Mishnah mentioned that the Erev Shabbat that fell out during the Chag, there were only 48 tekiot. In that enumeration of the 48 tekiot, absent is the three tekiot that are blown on the 10th stair. So the Gemara wants to understand why that is. V'ilu l'mala asirit lo k'tani. They said, matnit and mani. Who's the author of our Mishnah who does not have those three tekiot on the 10th stair? Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, it must be authored by Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, because we have a braita. Titania, shalosh lamala asirit. Three of the tekiot were done on the 10th stair. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov omer, shalosh agave mizbeach. Three of them were done by the mizbeach. Ha'omer lamala asirit, enu omer agave mizbeach. The Gemara now says, whoever says that with the mala asirit, believes that they weren't blown on the mizbeach. Ha'omer agave mizbeach, enu omer lamala asirit. In that they are mutually exclusive opinions. So now the Gemara says, my time with Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's position? Kaven to talk of the tichat she'arim. You're blowing for the opening of the gates, meaning from the Shar Elyon, and for the Shar Takton, from Allah Asirit, Lamali de Talka. Why would you blow the shofar on the 10th stair? I love Sharhu. It's not one of the gateways. Hilkach al-gabe mizbeach adif. Therefore, doing it by the mizbeach makes more sense. Meaning that if you're going to have to blow the shofar, you want to associate it with something. So, if until now we associated with the opening of the gates, whether it was the Shar Elyon or the Shar HaTachton, that makes sense. But now to have all of a sudden these blowings in the middle of the 10th stair, what does that have to do with the Miloy Hamayim? But rather, we're going to associate the three tekiot, according to Rashi, with the Arava, the Skifat Arava around the Mizbeach. According to others, and Rashi himself brings this alternate opinion, with the three by the time either of the Nisuch HaMayim, or more likely with the bringing the water towards the Mizbeach for the Nisuch HaMayim. Rashi discusses the issues with that, because we have a Mishnah earlier that mentions them by the Arava. So he then says, maybe the possibility is that they are at the same time. While the Skifat Arava is going on, they're bringing the water towards the Mizbeach for the Nisuch HaMayim, and therefore they're able to capture both of them in those three blowings. But according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, whatever is blown by the Shar Elyon and then by the Karka Azara suffices in terms of the Miloy Hamayim. So therefore, I have an additional three tekiot. We have a Mesora that there have to be 12 tekiot associated with the Chag. So he says that those last three are not blown on the 10th stair, but rather they're blown by the Azakifat Arava. They're blown by the Mizbeach, where it makes more sense because there's nothing significant about the 10th stair descending from the Ezrat Yisrael down into the Ezrat Nashim. So therefore, we blow three when they hit the Shar Elyon, three when they hit the Shar Tachton, the Karka Azara, three when they come back from Miloy Hamayim by the Shar Hamayim, and the last three for Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov will be by the Mizbeach. Rabbanan Sabri came into the talk of the Miloy Hamayim, Agave Mizbeach, Lomali. The Rabbanan say these 12 tekiot are all associated with the bringing up in the Shivat Hamayim. So what is blowing them on the Mizbeach have any relevance over here? Hilkach the malas sirit adif. Therefore, it makes more sense to blow them on the 10th stair, because there it's muchach milta. There it's clear that the blowing is associated with the Miloy Hamayim, and therefore there won't be any questions that these 12 are associated with the bringing of the water for the Nisuch Hamayim. As far as the 10th stair is concerned, Rashi says it has no meaning. The 10th stair is just because it's makom misuyam. It's a delineated place that you can remember and has no specific significance. Its only significance is that it's during the process of descending down to do Miloy Hamayim. So the Rabbanim believe you do all the blowings associated with the Miloy Hamayim. The Mizbeach has nothing to do with this, and therefore there's no blowing by the Mizbeach. Ki ator of Achor Bar Chanina midaroma. When Achor Bar Chanina came up from the south, Aiti matnita biyodeh, he brought a breita, which he's going to explain, and then his explanation is going to lead to a chiddush, which is, Bnei Aaron HaKohanim itku'u b'chatzotzrot. So ain't Talmud Omar yitku'u. Why do you have to tell me that they have to blow, they have to trumpet the chatzotzrot? Shekvar ne'amar utka'atem b'chatzotzrot alolotechem v'alzivchei shalmechem. So we already have the pasuk that tells you have to blow the chatzotzrot when it comes to the korbanot. So why do I need you to tell me that Bnei Aaron HaKohanim itku'u b'chatzotzrot? So, matam alomri tgu'a, kol d'fi'a musafim togim. So that means that it's according to the musafim, that's how many trumpets or blows that you have. Hu tani la, he brought the braita, v'hu amar la, and now he explained the braita. Lomar shetokim akol musafu musaf. Comes to explain us that the braita means that you blow separately for every musaf. Therefore, if you have a day which has two musafim, for instance, Shabbat and Rosh Chodesh, or Shabbat and Chol HaMoed Sukkot, where there's a musaf for Shabbat and a musaf for Rosh Chodesh, or musaf for Shabbat and musaf for Chol HaMoed Sukkot, you would blow nine tekiot associated with each one of those korbanot. Each korban would have its own shir, the shir of Shabbat for the korban musaf for Shabbat, the shir of Rosh Chodesh for the korban of Rosh Chodesh, the shir of Chol HaMoed Sukkot, if it coincided with Shabbat for that musaf, and you'd blow it, break it up into three parakim, and you would blow nine tekiot on each one of those karbanei musaf. That is the explanation that Rabbi Achar Bar Chanina brings to this braita, and why it says, Bnei Aaron itku'u b'chatzotzrot. The additional itku'u comes to teach you that not only do you blow on the korbanot, but you blow on each series of korbanot individually. Each musaf gets its own set of tekiot. Tanan, our Mishnah says, Erev Shabbat Shabbatot HaChag, Hayusham Memchet. We had 48 tekiot, which was the maximum. That was the most that you could have. Vimita, if Rav Achar Bar Chanina is correct, litnei Shabbat shato b'chag, then you could have Shabbat that falls out in Sukkot. Mishkachala, 51. It would have 51 tekiot. Not only 48, but he would even have 51 tekiot. Amar Rabbi Zeira lefi shein togim liftikat sharim b'Shabbat. So Rabbi Zeira says, I'll solve the problem because you don't blow for the opening of the gates on Shabbat. So let's go through the count. A normal day in the Mikdash has 21 tekiot. So that you'll have on Shabbat as well, 21 tekiot. In addition to that, you now have the Musafei Shabbat, which bring you an additional line. And you have the Musafim of Sukkot, or Chol HaMoed Sukkot. So now you have 18 additional tekiot associated with the Musafim. So 18 plus the 21 gets you to 39. In addition to that, you have the additional 12 that are associated with the Miloi Hamayim and the Niso Hamayim. So if I add on 12 on top of the 39, I end up with 51 tekiot. That's in excess of the 48. So why is the Mishnah telling us that 48 is the maximum? So along comes Rabbi Zeira and says, that's because on Shabbat, they did not blow the shofar for the opening of the gates in the morning. As Rashi explains here, that the opening of the gates in the morning, blowing the shofar then wasn't a mitzvah necessarily. It was done to, as almost a roll call. It was done to wake people up and tell them to get ready. So that we don't do on Shabbat because there's no reason to be docha Shabbat for something that's not necessarily a mitzvah. And therefore the openings of the gates did not contain those three blowings. If you subtract 3 from 51, you're back to 48. So it's no better than the example that our Mishnah brought. Amarava man ha delochash lekimcha. Who is this individual who's not careful about how he mills his wheat in that the flour that he makes is not clean or pure? Chado, number one, the b'chol yom t'nan. First of all, the Mishnah says that on every day, they blew 21 tekiot. The Mishnah doesn't say every weekday, it says every day. That includes Shabbat, and included in those 21 blowings that are of every day includes the opening of the gates in the morning. So that would mean that on the opening of gates on Shabbat, they did blow the shofar. V'od, inami gadodininu, even if he's right, and let's say that they don't blow the shofar for the opening of the gates on Shabbat, then litnei Shabbat, shebetoch hachag, hayusham arba'im u'shmoneh, if you have them equal now, and they both have 48 tekiot, you're better off putting down the one of Shabbat betoch hachag than a chag that falls out on Erev Shabbat. Why is that? Because I'd learn more information from the fact that you told me about the 48 on Shabbat. Because the Shema Mina Tarte, I would learn two things. Number one, Shema Mina Rebbe Elezer ben Yaakov. I would have the conclusion about Rebbe Elezer ben Yaakov that the blowings for the Milu Hamayim are not on the 10th stair. That I would get both, from both situations. I get it from the situation that's mentioned in our Mishnah, which mentions the case on Erev Shabbat. I'd also get it from the case where the Chag fell out on Shabbat. But in addition to that, Shema Mina, the Rav Achar Bar Chanina, I would have benefited with the additional Chiddush, Rav Achar Bar Chanina, that each Musaf gets a separate set of Tekiot. And that Chiddush is worthwhile to mention that case instead of the case of Erev Shabbat. The case in Erev Shabbat has the additional 6 Tekiot for Levatel et Ami Milacha and to do the Havdalah, to separate between the Chol and the Kodesh. Nevertheless, that's already mentioned earlier in the Mishnah. So that information was already given. We don't need that in the 48. So it would have been a bigger chiddush to tell us about the case of Shabbat that coincides with Chol HaMoed rather than the case where we're talking about Erev Shabbat that coincides with Chol HaMoed. So Rava, for both of those reasons, rejects the answer of Rabbi Zeira and says, Ela Amar Rava, Tishein Tokim Limilu Yamayim B'Shabbat. It's a very simple answer. He says that we know from the Mishnayot early in the Masechta that when it came to being Shivat HaMayim, for Shabbat, they brought it up the day before. They brought it up on Friday afternoon because they couldn't do it on Shabbat. So Milui Amayim didn't exist on Friday night. Since there's no Milui Amayim on Friday night, and then there's no Simchat Beit HaShoeva, which leads to the Milui Amayim, Shivat Amayim in the morning on Shabbat morning, therefore there's no Shofar. So you're missing actually 12 Tekiyot then. So if I back out 12 Tekiyot, even if Rav Achar Bar Chanina is correct, and if you had add all of those together, you get to 51, you just lost 12, because there's no Milui Hamayim on Shabbat. That's what Gemara says, the Batzei Tuva. So then we're missing a whole bunch, and you're not even close to 48 anymore. So the Gemara challenges from another part. Litnei Nami Rosh Hashanah Shachaliot B'Shabbat. What happens when Rosh Hashanah coincides with Shabbat? Rosh Hashanah not only is Rosh Hashanah, but it's also on Shabbat, and it also is Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Hashanah is always Rosh Chodesh. It's also the first day of Tishrei, not only just the first day of the year. We don't notice it so much because the way Chazal have presented it and the way that our tefillot are written, the tefillot musafim of Rosh Hashanah, the Rosh Chodesh is subverted inside of Rosh Hashanah. We make veiled references to it in the davening. We say bet musfei yom Rosh Hashanah zeh, musfei in plural to include the musafim of Rosh Chodesh. We mention the Si'irim, the Si'ir, the Chatat, in plural, the Si'irei Chatat. One is the Si'ir of Rosh Chodesh, one is the Si'ir of Rosh Hashanah. So in a veiled way, we mention Rosh Chodesh, we don't explicitly mention it. But nevertheless, it is Rosh Chodesh, and that means that there are three sets of Musafim. They're the Musafim of Shabbat, they're Musafim of Rosh Hashanah, and they're Musafim of Rosh Chodesh. That means you have three sets of Musafim. According to Rav Acha Bar Chanina's Chiddush, that every set of Musafim gets Tekiyot, that means now I have three sets of nine Tekiyot for the three sets of Musafim. That's 3 times 9, that's 27, plus the normal 21 on every day, that gets me to the 48. So now I have another series of 48 Tekiyot that would match what we mentioned in our Mishnah in the case of Chol HaMoed Sukkot on Erev Shabbat. So that's what the Gemara wants to understand here. V'litnei nami Rosh Hashanah shechalio b'Shabbat. D'ha'ika t'lata musafim. You have three musafim. Musaf to Rosh Hashanah, musaf to Rosh Chodesh, musaf to Shabbat. Where it says, Erev Shabbat shoto chachag itzdrichilei. We're better off using the case that our Mishnah uses is because Lashmina k'Rav Elezer ben Yaakov, because that does teach us a Chiddush. They teach us the Chiddush that the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that we don't blow on the 10th stair. He says, wait a minute. Atu mi kamar litneha velo litneha. I didn't make a suggestion that we shouldn't write the case of Erev Shabbat during the Chag, and we should write the case of Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Chodesh that falls out on Shabbat. Litneha, litneha. Bring both cases down, then you'll teach me two Chiddushim. You'll teach me the Chiddush of Rav Achar bar Chanina with regards to Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Chodesh, and Shabbat, that you blow separately for each one of the Musafim that is brought, so that gives you an additional 27 Tekiyot. And bring the case here of Erev Shabbat that falls out B'Tocha Chag, because over there you'll have a case where you also have 48 Tekiyot, and it'll teach me the Chiddush of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov that we don't blow on the 10th stair. Where it says, Han Tana V'Shir, our Breita, our Mishnah over here, did not make an exclusive or comprehensive list. It may have gave an example of the 48 Tekiyot, but that doesn't mean it's the only one. There are other ones. So Gemara says, okay, my shir, the high shir. What else did it leave over that we can say that this one was left over? In order to suggest that the list is not comprehensive, you can't have one exception. If you have one exception to the list, that means it doesn't belong in the list. It's not that he left things out. If you find more than one item that he left off the list, then you can say the list is not comprehensive. And therefore, what he left out is no meaning in terms of being left out of the list. It could be a part of the list. He just left it out. So in the case here, what besides the case of Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Chodesh, Shabbat, did he leave out that we can say that the list is not comprehensive? Where it says, Shir Erev Pesach, he left out Erev Pesach. Because Erev Pesach also has additional Tekiyot. It has the 21 Tekiyot that are normally associated with the day. And it also has the Tekiyot that are associated with the Hallel of bringing the Korban HaPesach. The Korban HaPesach, as you know from the Gemara Mitzrachim, is brought in three kitot, and three groupings that bring the Korban HaPesach. In each one of those groupings, while they were bringing the Korban HaPesach, they also sang the Hallel. Rashi over here says that the people who were bringing the Korban were singing it. Tosafot proves that it's the Levi'im that are singing the Hallel. And during that process of Hallel, there are 9 tekiyot that are blown. So if you have 3 kitot with Hallel, with 9 tekiyot, that's 3 times 9 is 27. 27 plus 21 is 48. So now again, we're back to 48 Tekiyot. This is another one that could have been placed in our Mishnah and is absent from the Mishnah. So Gemara says, now I have two exceptions. I have two cases which were left out of the Mishnah that could have been there. The case of Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Chodesh, Shabbat, and the case of Erev Pesach on a regular day. So those two were both 48. And since they could have been in the Mishnah, they're left out. That means our Mishnah is not a comprehensive list, and you can't prove anything from the fact that something is left out of our Mishnah. Now, as far as what transpired in terms of the Hallel and the Tekiyot, there's a Machloket Rashi and Tosafot over here. Rashi claims that every time they blew it started Hallel, they used to blow the shofar three times. And each grouping that was there used to say the Hallel, then repeat the Hallel, and then actually begin it a third time. That every grouping that got there were so many Korbanei Pesach that they actually finished Hallel once, then they finished the second time, and then they at least began into the third time. They didn't necessarily complete the third time, but they at least began it the third time. Before each Hallel, Rashi claims that they blew three Tekiyot. And that's how he gets to the 9 Tekiyot per kat or per grouping that went in to bring the Korban HaPesach of the three groupings that went in there on Erev HaPesach. Whereas Tosafot believes that the three Tekiyot that are associated with Hallel, there's one Tekiyah that is blown once they close the doors of the Azarah for whichever grouping was in there. The next two sets of three Tekiyot were blown because Hallel is actually broken down into two parts. There are two parts to Hallel, and every time we break it down to a part, we blow three Tekiyot before that. So Tosafot says that they blew the three Tekiyot when they closed the Azarah doors, they blew the three Tekiyot when they began the Hallel, and then they blew the three Tekiyot again at a Hafti Ki Yishma when they got to that next section of Hallel, the second section of Hallel, they blew three Tekiyot again, and that gives you the 9 Tekiyot. That gives you the 9 Tekiyot for each kat that was there. So that's how Tosafot views the 48 Tekiyot, the 9 Tekiyot that are associated with each grouping that is bringing the Korban HaPesach. The Gemara says, well, Imi Shum Erev Pesach, if that's your example, Lav Shiurahu, that's not really left over. The Hamani, Rabbi Yehuda, because that could be authored by Rabbi Yehuda. Damar Mimehem Shokach Lishit, when it came to the third grouping, Lo Igia Lomar Hafti Ki Yishma Hashem. They never got to that far in Hallel, Mipnei Shayu Imam Mamam Mu'atim, because there was a small number of individuals. So there was a small number of individuals in the last kat because most of the people came in the first two. The Zrizim, Makdimim, the Mitzvot, they all came. The stragglers that came in that last grouping were so few that they couldn't finish up Shema. Now, according to Rashi, it means even in the first cycle of Shema, they could only get up to a Hafti Ki Yishma, because Rashi says that they used to cycle through Hallel. Sorry, even in the first cycling of Hallel, they only reached up to a Hafti Ki Yishma, because according to Rashi, they used to repeat Hallel three times while they were being the Korban HaPesach. This third group didn't even get through the first time that they were saying Hallel. So therefore, they would only have a chance to blow three Tekiyot. The latter six Tekiyot weren't blown because they didn't get to a second or third time to start Hallel. That's how Rashi reads it. Tosafot, on the other hand, says, no, that what it means that they didn't get to Hafti Ki Yishma is that they only had a chance to blow the Tekiyot in the beginning, but they didn't get to the beginning of the next perek. Since they didn't get to the beginning of the next perek, they didn't blow the Tekiyot that were associated with it. That means that the original groups used to get through the Hallel and finish it. This third group never finished Hallel even one time. According to Rashi, they also didn't finish it one time. But the Gemara there says that they used to shanu velo shilshu. They went twice and not three times. So according to Tosafot, it means that the first two groups finished Hallel. The third group did not finish Hallel. According to Rashi, it means every group said Hallel twice. And then, in the third time, they didn't finish it. So in the first group, they said Hallel twice, didn't finish it the third time. Second group also said Hallel twice, started the third, but didn't finish it. The third group didn't even get to finish the first Hallel. So according to both Rashi and Tosafot, in the end, now you lose 6 Tekiyot over here. Once you've lost the 6 Tekiyot, then you're below the 48 Tekiyot. And Erev Pesach is no longer relevant as being something that was left out of that list in the Mishnah because it doesn't match the list in the Mishnah. So Gemara says, wait a minute. How can you set up the Mishnah like Rabbi Yehuda Amart, the Reisha Delok Rabbi Yehuda? You already said that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda, when he enumerates the Tekiyot, he counts Tekiyah, Druah, Tekiyah as a single blowing. So therefore, he had the numbers in our Mishnah were 7 and 16, rather than 21 and 48. So how can you say Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the Mishnah, and that's why we're missing these 6 Tekiyot? So Mar says, V'dilma haitana savala kevatei bechado, poligalei bechado. Maybe this Tana holds like him in this position, which is by Pesach, they didn't finish the third time with Hallel. He disagrees with him about the count, the number of Tekiyot. He says that each one is counted separately, not counted as a single unit. So it's interesting here why the Gemara even pushes in this direction. The answer is most likely because if you're looking for a comprehensive list and you're saying there are exceptions to the rule, the exceptions to the rule have to be applicable to all Tanaim. If you can find a Tana where the exception is not relevant, then that could be the explanation for it being left out of the list. If that's already the explanation for being left out of the list, then you can't use that as a proof that this list is not comprehensive because there's a reason it was left out of the list. So as long as I have a way to say there's a reason for this not being in the list, then I have no proof that the list is not comprehensive. I have to find things that should have been in the list, and everybody agrees should have been in the list, and they were left out. Then I can argue that the list is not comprehensive. So already up here, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the case of Erev Pesach would not qualify because he would say it's less than 48. If he says that, then I have a reason why I would have left it out of the list. Even though the Chachamim disagree, but at least I have a position that would say it's this way. If that's the case, then I could say that the list is comprehensive. And anything that's left out means it was left out for a reason. Gemara says, Elamai Shayer, the High Shayer. Elamai Shayer, the High Shayer. What else was left over to prove that this is not a comprehensive list? Shayer, Erev Pesach, Shechaliot, Erev Shabbat. If you have Erev Pesach that falls out on Erev Shabbat, now you took care of the problem. If you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, you drop six tkiot out because they never finished the Hallel the third time. But on the other hand, it's Erev Shabbat. Erev Shabbat has an additional six tkiot for the Vatel Adami Melacha and for the Havdalah to start from Chol into Kodesh to know that Shabbat has started. Those six will replace the six that we dropped from Korban Pesach, and now you're back to 48. So that's what the Gemara says here. Erev Pesach, Shechal Liyot, Be'erev Shabbat, Apikshit. You take six out for the Korban Pesach. Ayoshit, they put six in for every regular Erev Shabbat. And because of that, now you're back to 48. So now I have a case where it was left out, even though it was 48. The case of Erev Pesach, that's on Erev Shabbat. So I can also argue by the case of Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Chodesh, and Shabbat, it was also left out because the list is not comprehensive. The list just gave us an example of one case where you have that number of tkiot. Now the Gemara says, Vein Mosifim HaMemchet. Our Mishnah says that there are no more than 48 tkiot in the Mikdash. Velo, is that really true? Vayika Erev Pesach Shechaliot B'Shabbat. What about a case of Erev Pesach that falls out on Shabbat? Now, on a normal weekday, we have 21 tkiot. On Shabbat, we have a Musaf. So you already have an additional 9 tkiot that are added in just for the Musafei Shabbat. You're up to 30 on a regular Shabbat. Now it's also Erev Pesach. Now as far as Erev Pesach is concerned, depends. According to the Rabbanon who argue on Rabbi Yehuda, you have another 27 tkiot because of the three groups that brought the Korban of Pesach. Each one of them had three cycles of Hallel, and that means that they had 9 tkiot in each one of those groups. Or according to Tosafot, they had one cycle of Hallel, which got them the 9 tkiot that they needed because they blew 3 times when they closed the door, 3 times for the beginning of Hallel, 3 times in the middle of Hallel. So because of that, I end up with 9 tkiot in each grouping, and that's 27. 30 plus 27 is 57 tkiot. And even if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, that the third grouping never finished Hallel, they only got up to Avdi Ki Yishma, and you drop 6 tkiot out, 57 minus 6 is 51. That's still bigger than 48. So it doesn't matter who you hold like, you still have an instance where you'll have more than 48 kiyot in the Mikdash. Gemara says, Vayikah Erev Pesach Shaliyot B'Shabbat, Dilu Rabbi Yehuda, Chamishin V'Chado. According to Rabbi Yehuda, at least 51. Ilu Rabbanon, Chamishin V'Sheva. According to Rabbanon, you have 57. Kitani Midei D'Iti B'Chol Shana. Gemara, the Mishnah, or the author of the Mishnah, the Tana decided to only put things in there that happens every year. Erev Pesach Shaliyot B'Shabbat, the Leta B'Chol Shana. Erev Pesach that falls out on Shabbat, this doesn't happen every year. The loyte b'chol shana v'shana does not happen every year. Loktani, there he didn't include them. Where it says, Atu Erev Shabbat Shabtoch HaChag Mi'ita b'chol shana. Is that really true? That you always have an Erev Shabbat in the middle of Sukkot? Is that really true? Zimin de la mishkachale. There is a case where Erev Shabbat will not fall out during Sukkot. Pechi dami, what's that case? Go and shechal yom tov rishon b'Erev Shabbat. When the first day of Sukkot falls out on a Friday. The first day of Sukkot falls out on a Friday. That means that Erev Shabbat is the first day of Yom Tov. Then, from there, you'll go the whole week, and by next Friday, Erev Shabbat will be Shmini Atzeret. You'll be outside of Sukkot already. So if that's the case, now you have a problem. Because even if Erev Shabbat coincides with Yom Tov, you'd say, oh great, I have all the tkiot that I need because it's Sukkot and it's Erev Shabbat. No, because the first day, which is Yom Tov, the Milui Amayim is not Doche. The Simchat Beit HaShoeva and the Milui Amayim is not Doche Yom Tov. Just like it's not Doche Shabbat, it's also not Doche Yom Tov. The tkiot of the Milui Amayim are not Doche Shabbat, they're not Doche Yom Tov. Even though we blow the shofar for other reasons on that day. Tosafot discussed that, we mentioned this earlier in the Perek, that that's because when you're blowing just the Chatzotzrot, if you're just blowing the tkiot, then we allow it to override Shabbat. But in a case where it's associated with other instruments, then when we knock out those other instruments, we also knock out the tkiot. So in this case, you won't have a case where Erev Shabbat coincides with the Chag, where you're going to actually have 48 tkiot. So there is a case where it won't work out every year. So that's not a good answer. Gemara says, if it falls out on Erev Shabbat, we don't allow it to happen. That means whatever the first day of Sukkot is also the day of Shmini Atzeret, is also the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Because Rosh Hashanah falls out on the first of the month. Sukkot is on the 15th, and Shmini Atzeret is 7 days later on the 22nd. So the first, the 8th, the 15th, and the 22nd all have the same day of the week. That means that if Sukkot falls out on Friday, Shmini Atzeret will also be Friday, but also means Rosh Hashanah was on Friday. And we know the principle of Lo Adu Rosh. Rosh Hashanah cannot fall out on a Sunday, a Wednesday, or a Friday. Why can't it fall out on a Friday? My time. When is Yom Kippur fall out? If it's on a Friday, that means Rosh Hashanah is a Friday. That means Yom Kippur falls out on a Sunday. It'll be on a Sunday, and we don't want Yom Kippur to fall out on a Sunday. Mara talks about the fact that we don't want Yom Kippur to fall out on a Friday or a Sunday, because then you have two adjacent days where there's no malacha allowed whatsoever. So we don't like that. We have Yom Tov and Shabbat, it's okay because Melechet Ochel Nefesh is permitted on Yom Tov. But here we have Yom Kippur and Shabbat adjacent to each other. You have 2 days of complete Yisr Melacha that they didn't want. So therefore, Yom Kippur, we don't have it fall out on a Sunday, and we don't have it fall out on a Friday. So if that's the case, we're going to alter the calendar so it never comes out that Sukkot falls out on a Friday. If that's the case, then every year you'll have a case where Erev Shabbat falls out sometime during Sukkot, sometime during Chol HaMoed Sukkot. Gemara says, is that really true? So if it's Emin HaVachad Shav, the Yilchak Tachin and Lay, therefore we push it off. We change the day of Rosh Hashanah in order to stop that. Umi Tachin and Lay, is that really true that we change the calendar to accommodate this problem? Vatanan, don't we have a Mishnah? Chalve Shabbat Krivim B'Yom HaKippurim. The Chalavim of the Korbanot that were brought on Shabbat, they can be brought on Motzei Shabbat, which is Yom Kippur, because Shabbat has a high enough status that you can bring it on Yom Kippur itself. When we were by the Beit Midrash, by the house of Rav in Bavel, Aviamri had the Tanya, that which we say Yom Kippurim Shechal Yot Erev Shabbat. Yom Kippur that falls out before Shabbat, lo yutokim, they didn't blow the shofar. Or in a case where it falls out on Motzei Shabbat, they didn't make Abdullah. Divrei Akuhi, that's according to everyone. So there happens to be a machloket there with regards to the chalavim, with regards to the fats of the korbanot of Shabbat that go into Yom Kippur, from Yom Kippur into Shabbat, whether you can be makriv them on the other day. If it came from Yom Kippur, can you be makriv them on Shabbat? If they came from Shabbat, can you be makriv them on Yom Kippur? But with regards to the aspect of the blowing the shofar coming into Shabbat from Yom Kippurim, or making Abdullah from Shabbat going out into Yom Kippur, everyone agrees over there that we don't do that, because there is no reason to do it. The only reason to be Mekadesh is if you're elevating, you're moving up in Kedusha. Yom Kippur has the same Kedusha as Shabbat, so there's no reason to be Tokeya on Erev Shabbat, because there's no change from the day before to Shabbat. And the same is true on Motzei Shabbat. If you're going from Shabbat into Yom Kippur, there's no change that you have to make Abdullah from Shabbat into Yom Kippurim. So because of that, everybody agrees that those don't take place. But what you see from all these memorot were that they did have Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah falling out on Friday, and Yom Kippur falling out on a Sunday or a Friday. So how do you tell me that it never happened? Because they fixed the calendar so it won't happen. So Kisalikid Nahatam Ashkechei, when I went over there, I found Rabbi Yehuda Abrei Rabbi Shimon Pazi Diotif. He was sitting with Amar. He says, Rabbi Kivi, that is Rabbi Akiva. Again, it's not really relevant to our Gemara. That happens to be a machloket with regards to the Chalavim. But nevertheless, what we do see from here is that Yom Kippur can fall out back to back with Shabbat, adjacent to Shabbat. Lokasha Rabbanon HaAcherim. That there's no question here. It has to do with the Rabbanon HaAcherim. The Rabbanon HaAcherim argue about the ability of the Chachamim to alter the calendar. The Acherim believe that the calendar works on an alternating basis. Every month is Malay, and then the next month is Chaser. Malay, Chaser, Malay, Chaser. So, Rechim, you have necessity, you don't change it. That is the structure of the calendar, and we look for the Molad on those days. Okay, when you do an Al-Piriya, you can have some trouble with that. But we basically maintain that structure of Malay, Chaser, Malay, Chaser, and we don't do anything else to change the calendar. On the other hand, the Chachamim agree that that is the base of the calendar. That's what we start out with. But if there's a necessity to move the calendar in order to accommodate these problems, like this case of Rosh Hashanah that falls out on a Friday and Yom Kippur will be on a Sunday, we do change the order and the number of days in the year in order to accommodate that problem and take care of it so that we won't have issues where it falls out in this manner. So there is a machloket, basically Tanaim, about whether you're allowed to alter the calendar in order to fix for these problems. The Chachamim believe no. The Chachamim always believe as the Tanya. Chachamim omim ein ben atzeret leatzeret vein ben Rosh Hashanah leRosh Hashanah ela arba'a yamim bilvad. Every year, if you know what day Rosh Hashanah is this year, in the subsequent year there'll be 4 days between them. It'll be the 5th day afterwards. So, for instance, if this year Rosh Hashanah is on a Sunday, in the following year Rosh Hashanah will be on a Thursday. Same is true with Shavuot. If you go 12 months out, what you're gonna end up with is a 4 day differential. If Shavuot was on Sunday, now it'll be on Thursday in the subsequent year. That has to do with the lunar year. A lunar year with alternating months between 30 and 29 turns out to be 354 days. 350 of those days are divisible by 7. So if you only had 350 days, Rosh Hashanah would turn out on the same day the following year. But because it has 354 days, those additional 4 days push it out 4 days, and therefore it's 4 days later in the subsequent year. So if it was Sunday this year, it's going to be on Thursday in the subsequent year. That's what the Acharim believe, because the calendar always has 12 months, 6 of which are chaser, 6 of which are Malay, 6 of which are 29 days, 6 of which are 30 days, which gives you a 354-day lunar year every year based on the calendar, even al pi ha-ri'iya. That's the Acharim's position. And exception to that is Ma'ita Shanu Mubaret, like this year where it was a leap year, Chamisha, then you have a 5-day difference. That's because they believe that Adar Bet is always chaser. Adar Bet is always a month that is 29 days and not 30 days. So 29 days, 28 of those days is divisible by 7. That means I have a remainder of 1. That remainder of 1 is now added to the normal 354 days of a year, and that gives me 5 additional days over numbers that are divisible by 7. So that means in a leap year, you'll have a 5-day differential. So technically, if Rosh Hashanah was on Sunday, in the subsequent year, it would be on Friday. If it was a leap year, because there'd be a 5-day differential between them that's not divisible by 7. But what you see from the Acharim is that these are steadfast rules. You can look at Rosh Hashanah this year, know when it'll be next year, and the subsequent year, because the calendar will always have this gap period between them. Lunar calendar will always be 354 days, or if you have a leap year, it'll be 383 days. And therefore, you always know it never changes. According to the Chachamim, that's not true, because we can make adjustments in the calendar to take care or take note of other issues. And because of that, these steadfast principles won't hold, because there will be exceptions to the rule. So when we say that it won't fall out that way, that's according to the Chachamim, that it won't fall out that way, and that's the way our practice is to ensure that lo adu rosh. On the other hand, when you told me about this Mishnah that says the possibility of adjacency between Yom Kippur and Shabbat, or what was going on in the Bei Rav about the issue of Havdalah or blowing the Tzitzkiot before Shabbat, that's all according to the position of the Acharim, who think that you don't fix the calendar, and therefore there's a possibility that it could fall out on Adu Rosh. Adu Rosh is a possibility according to the Acharim. Right, so that would explain again why our Mishnah gives the case of 48, because that's a case that will fall out every year according to the Chachamim, where you'll have Erev Shabbat during Sukkot because of Adu Rosh. And therefore, that's the example mentioned. On the other hand, the case of Erev Pesach that falls out on Shabbat, which would garner you 51 or 57 Tekiot, that's not something that happens every year. So therefore, we can basically say a principle, you're not going to get over 48. Yeah, there is this rare exception where you will get over 48, but that happens every once in a while. It doesn't happen all the time, and therefore the time of our Mishnah didn't bother to mention it. Now the Gemara goes back and asks another question on Rav Acha Bar Chanina. Rav Acha Bar Chanina suggested that every Musaf gets separate Tekiot that are associated with it. So here the Gemara asks, Meitavei, we have a question from a Tanaic source against this position of Rav Acha Bar Chanina, which is, Rosh Chodesh Shechal Yopi Shabbat. When Rosh Chodesh and Shabbat coincide, then Shir Shir Rosh Chodesh Duche Shir Shir Shabbat. The Shir of Rosh Chodesh overrides the Shir of Shabbat. So once you've done that, then you don't have two separate sets of Tekiot, because there's only one Shir now. There's only a Shir of Rosh Chodesh, no Shir of Shabbat. That means only 9 Tekiot, not 9 Tekiot for the Musaf of Shabbat, and 9 Tekiot for the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh. And that would be a problem for Rav Acha Bar Chanina. If you're right, Rav Acha Bar Chanina, then Lema the Shabbat, Lema the Rosh Chodesh, say them separately. I'm Rav Safra, my Doche. No, you misunderstood. Doche doesn't mean to eliminate it entirely. Doche means Likadein, that we bring it forward. That we bring forward Rosh Chodesh before that of Shabbat. So normally, you should have said Shabbat first and then Rosh Chodesh. Yet, despite the fact, we're Doche. Doche doesn't mean that eliminates it entirely. It just overrides it temporarily. Rosh Chodesh goes first, and then we do Shabbat. Vamai, why do we do that change? Tadir, Shenu, Tadir, Tadir, Kodem. When it comes to something that's more frequent, Shabbat, that would take precedence over Rosh Chodesh, which is less frequent. So why are we giving Rosh Chodesh precedence over Shabbat? So Rabbi Yochanan Leida, Shukva Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh Vizmano. It's a way of publicizing the fact that that day was Rosh Chodesh, and that the Edim had come, and Beit Din had declared this day as Rosh Chodesh. So they did unusual things in the service of the Migdash in order that people who saw it would know that it was Rosh Chodesh. So one of the things they did was they put the Shir of Rosh Chodesh before Shabbat to make it clear to people that this day is Rosh Chodesh. So even though technically Shabbat should have gone first, they switched the order in order to put Rosh Chodesh before Shabbat in order to publicize the fact that today was Rosh Chodesh. V'hai hekera avdina, hai hekera achrina avdina. This is the heker, this is the way that we show people that this is Rosh Chodesh. We have another heker, which was familiar to us, that's now, we have the Mishnah, it's the last Mishnah in Shkalim, that says, Tamid shel shachar, nitani mechatzi kevesh ulamata b'mizrach, the gears here is Mizrach, Tosavot says the gears is Marav, we had the same problem in the Mishnah in Shkalim as to what the gears is, whether it's Mizrach or Marav. It's not so relevant, but the point being that when they used to bring the Korban HaTamid, the six individuals who were bringing the Evarim from the quartering of the animal to the Mizbeach, they used to bring the limbs, put them down on the Kevesh, then they used to go down to say Shema and do other Avodah, and then eventually put them on the Mizbeach. So when they came to the Mizbeach, they used to leave them on the ramp up to the Mizbeach, either on the eastern side or the western side. Mishel Musafim, and those of Musaf, they used to put Nitanim Mechatzi Kevesh Ulamata B'marav, on the opposite side. Because on Shabbat, you have the Tamid, Shel Shachar, and you have the Musafim. Now the Tamid Shel Shachar has to get on the Mizbeach first, because everything has to be, the pyre that burns all the other Korbanot, has to be after the Tamid Shel Shachar. So in order to ensure we know where the Tamid Shel Shachar is, we had a location on the ramp that was obvious. It was either the eastern side or the western side on the lower half. And the Musafim were put on the opposite side, so there would be no mix-up. Now in a case, Vesha Rosh Chodesh, in a case where it's also Rosh Chodesh and Shabbat, they are Nitanim Tachar HaKov HaMizbeach Ulamato. They're placed a little below the area of the Soveiv. So the area of the Soveiv is more than halfway up the ramp, because the Soveiv is 6 amot off the ground. It allows you to walk around the Mizbeach. So the ramp that reaches to there is more than halfway up the ramp. So this is higher up than the Evarim of the Musafim of Shabbat, or the Evarim of the Tamid Shel Shachar. And so Rosh Chodesh were placed up there. Ve'amar Rabbi Yochanan explains why we do that is, Le'dash hukva Rosh Chodesh bizmano. The teaches that Rosh Chodesh was established in its time. So Mar says, Trei heker avdinan, that's not a question. That's one heker that they did. They put Rosh Chodesh on the top of the ramp so everybody would know it's Rosh Chodesh. So it got a special place, even higher up than the Korbanot of the Tamid Shel Shachar or Shel Musaf Shabbat, in order to everybody know that there was a Musaf Rosh Chodesh and that day was Rosh Chodesh. So Gemara says, well, we already have a heker. Why do we need the heker with regards to the changing of the shear? So Gemara answers, that's not a problem. We have two things that are a heker. The chazi hai chazi, the one who saw this heker saw it. Oh, the chazi b'hai chazi. And whoever saw the other one saw the other one. Meaning that not everybody's in the same place at the same time. So maybe one person saw this heker and the other one saw the other heker. So we do multiple things to indicate that it is Rosh Chodesh. And that does not limit us to one type of heker. We have a heker with regards to the shear changing. We also have a heker with regards to the fact that they put the Evarim of the Musaf Rosh Chodesh higher up the ramp so that people would notice them and know that it was Rosh Chodesh. So we have two different hekerim, and some saw this one, some saw the other one, maybe some saw both, but it's not a problem to have multiple hekerim. So that gets Rav Acha bar Chanina out of his problem, which is, here we seem to indicate that Shabbat was overridden by Rosh Chodesh. And the Gemara says, no, it's not that it's overridden completely, it's just that the order is changed because of Heker, and the Heker is that we will do the Shir of Rosh Chodesh prior to the Shir of Shabbat, despite the fact that logic would have dictated otherwise, that we've done Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh because Shabbat is Tadir. Now, even though Rav Acha bar Chanina is not knocked off or refuted in this case, in tomorrow's daf he will be refuted, and based on that, then the simpler explanation of what happened here is that Rosh Chodesh is Doche Shabbat, that Rosh Chodesh overrides Shabbat, and therefore, based on the Minhag HaGrua in Eretz Yisrael, when Rosh Chodesh coincides with Shabbat, when anything else coincides with Shabbat, the Shir Shayom is that of Shabbat, and we say Mizmor Shel Yom HaShabbat. The exception to that rule is when Rosh Chodesh coincides with Shabbat. In that case, we say the Shir of Rosh Chodesh, Barchi Nafshi, and we don't say Mizmor Shel Yom HaShabbat whatsoever. It overrides it. So the Minhag HaGrua is only to say Barchi Nafshi, not to say Mizmor Shel Yom HaShabbat. Other places say both of them. They say the Shir of Shabbat, and then the Shir of Rosh Chodesh. But the Gra is crudely premised on this Braita that we just quoted, that Rosh Chodesh overrides Shabbat. Okay, we'll stop over here.